You know you've got a comeback in you. When you take the next step, you're going to make it count. For your career, for your family, for your life. You can earn a degree you're proud of with Purdue Global. Purdue Global is backed by Purdue University, one of the nation's most respected and innovative public universities. This is your chance. This is your opportunity. This is your comeback. Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
This episode of Thinking Sideways is not brought to you by nihilism, or not, or it is, whatever, it doesn't matter. Instead, it's brought to you by your local animal shelter. Do you want to get a furry, feathered, or scaly friend? Probably all three put together. Yeah, you do. Go to your local animal shelter before the pet store, because pet stores are super lame. There are so many four-legged friends out there and two-legged friends out there that just want to find a good home, and they want to find their good home with you. Already have your furry friend and you want to help out? Donate to your local animal rescue or shelter organization. It doesn't have to be money. You can always volunteer. So get out there and give some love to some animals that need some love or whatever.
Thank you.
Hey there, welcome to another episode of Thinking Sideways. I'm Joe, joined as always by
Devin
and
Steve.
And again, well, surprise, surprise, we got a mystery to talk about. This week we're going to talk about the disappearance of Jim Gray, who you've all heard of, I'm sure.
Yeah, yeah, very exactly. Famous disappearance.
He's impacted all of your worlds.
Yeah.
He actually has had an impact, even if I have not heard of him. Very well known in the tech world, though. He disappeared almost 10 years ago. But first of all, I want to thank Shimmy, who suggested this like a couple of years ago. But back to Jim Gray, he was a big pioneer in the modern tech industry. He worked at Bell Labs, IBM, DEC, Microsoft, God knows how many companies he worked for. Very well-known guy, highly regarded. And he played a big part in developing technologies that we all use today.
Yep.
Believe it or not, he did.
Like the iPhone.
Yeah.
Right?
No.
Oh.
Not directly. I mean probably no. Somewhere, somehow, he, you know.
You could connect him to it, but.
He probably.
Probably. Yeah.
7 degrees of Jim Gray.
Yeah. Pretty much, yeah. Jim was a sailor, had a 40-foot sailboat. He boarded his sailboat the morning of January 28th, 2007, which was a Sunday. Sailed out alone to the Golden Gate in San Francisco into the ocean. It was supposed to be a day trip to the Farallon Islands, which are 27 miles west of San Francisco. It was a nice day, calm conditions, sunny. But still, Jim never made it back. He vanished without a trace, which is kind of odd. He didn't send a distress signal. No wreckage or flotsam from his boat was ever found. But like I said, he vanished without a trace. He totally did.
San Francisco Triangle?
Yeah, probably. I'd say it's kind of creepy, but Halloween month is over, so creepy's out, strange is in.
Yeah.
So that's what it is, strange. Mysterious.
Weird.
It's strange November.
Yeah. Kind of head-scratching November. Okay. But
that's dandruff.
Oh, is that what it is? Dandruff, that's scabies,
that's,
yeah.
That's cold weather.
Thought it was puzzlement. No, it's just scabies.
Yeah, that's fine.
Okay, back to story.
Oh, yeah, back to story.
That went sideways way too fast.
Yeah, I know. Always straight to the bottom. But when word got out that Jim Gray had disappeared, a lot of people in the tech world took notice. A lot of big names that you probably heard of, like Bill Gates, Sergey Brin from Google, Larry Ellison from Oracle, and the list goes on. What's his name? From Amazon.
Yeah.
Name of skill. Anyway, they all wanted to help in any way they could, and they all did. The search for Jim Gray was about as comprehensive as any search ever done for anybody, I think. You guys read all that stuff that I sent you about.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
It was big time.
Yeah.
Heavy duty search. Thousands of people were involved in this in the end. Yeah. But still, they didn't find him or a trace of him. So what happened? Did he skip out and everything, sail to Ensenada, start a new life? Did the Illuminati get him?
Yes.
Did the Kraken get him?
Yes.
Yeah.
No, the Kraken usually leaves wreckage of some kind.
Yeah. So it wasn't the Kraken.
Probably not.
The Krakenati, maybe. You know,
yeah.
The Naughty Kraken. Yeah. Of course the Kraken's naughty. That's kind of repetitious. Right. Yeah, okay.
So what's the deal here? I mean.
Let's go back to square one.
Okay.
So just a little bio stuff on Jim, and I'm not going to go back to the day he was born. He was 63 when he disappeared. On his second marriage, his second wife was Donna. They had about 20 years of experience sailing their boat and the boat
together,
and separately, and because Jim likes to single hand occasionally.
And sorry, you may not know this off the top of your head. It was a longer marriage. It was his second wife, but they were married for a lot.
Yeah, they were married for quite a while. Okay. I don't remember exactly.
I think
how
they
long.
Met in 94.
Something
I want
like
to
that.
Say.
Yeah.
And then they married just a couple of. They got married really quick because he proposed on their third date. Oh. I remember.
Uh huh.
Because they were both, at this point
older.
They were.
Yeah.
God, they would have both been about 50 at that point, so there's no reason to muck about.
But they were married for about 10 years. It wasn't as though years in, suddenly he disappears.
No, it's like they got married, and they went on their honeymoon in Australia, and next thing you know, one of them's dead.
Yeah,
well,
not like
figure.
That. Okay.
Yeah, no,
gotcha.
Not like that at all. They were together for a while.
I don't know. It doesn't probably matter. I just wonder with these things
to some
sometimes.
People it matters, but I don't think it does.
Their boat. You probably want to know this, was a CNC 40, which is a 40-foot sloop manufactured in Canada.
What's a sloop?
A sloop. Sloop is a single man, the most common rig that you see. It's a single masted sailboat.
Gotcha.
Yeah, and then the mast is stepped kind of forward.
Mm-hmm.
And then actually, there just might have been a cutter, because the cutter, the stat, it looks just like a sloop, but the mast is stepped a little further back, and it's got two head sails instead of one.
Okay.
So I don't know.
But it's just like when you think,
a single mast,
like when a kid
sailboat.
Draws a sailboat, this is what they're drawing.
Yeah,
pretty much. Okay,
yeah.
Gotcha.
Yeah, one mast,
sorry,
two
we
sails.
Don't all know boaty terms like you do.
Oh,
so.
That's a good point. Okay, yeah, sorry about that. As I mentioned, Jim Gray was in the tech business. At the time he disappeared, he was working for Microsoft. He lived in a house on Telegraph Hill in San Francisco.
It's a really tough life.
Yeah.
I know, poor guy.
Yeah, geez.
Yeah, by the way, they weren't
definitely the sort of thing you'd want to run away from.
Yeah, oh, exactly. They weren't renting, by the way. They owned
purchased.
A house.
I'm sure they did. Yeah,
they did. Which, if you know San Francisco neighborhoods, that's a spendy little neighborhood.
In
2007.
Yeah,
oh, yeah.
2007.
Definitely. Yeah, no, I did just for fun. I went out on Zillow, looked at listings on Telegraph Hill.
Don't do that.
And I found it.
How did that make you feel?
I found
so good.
I found one vacant lot. It was about 1,500 square feet for only $200,000.
But it was a vacant lot.
Well, it was a vacant lot, but they had some pictures of it, and it was on a hillside about literally this steep.
About a 45-degree angle or more.
Oh, much steeper 90. Than 45 degrees.
Almost 90.
In other words, so that was the cheapest thing
Still
available
house.
On Telegraph Hill.
That's crazy.
Yeah. Spendy.
Well, I mean, I guess if you have people like literally Bill Gates being concerned personally for your well-being, you're probably doing
You're an
okay.
influential guy.
Probably. Yeah. Probably influential, and they're going to pay you some good money. Yeah. And they had, as I said, a 40-foot sailboat. Now, again, tough life, which they kept moored in a marina in what's called Gashouse Cove in San Francisco Bay. It's kind of just west, several blocks of Ghirardelli Square.
Oh, yeah.
And I'm sure it costs you a boatload of bucks to keep your boat there.
Boatload of bucks. What was the boat called?
Tenacious. That's what
I was going
to say. It's a pretty clever name.
Yeah.
Tenacious, yeah.
Yeah.
And, yeah, I'm sure there was a little wordplay involved in there, too.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, like... Jim Gray's mother had died a few months before. That was October 2006. And on Sunday, January 28th, 2007, he was planning to sail to the Farallon Islands to scatter her ashes. Apparently that was her wishes, was to have her ashes scattered there.
Mm.
Kind of ironic that he disappears carrying out her last wishes. You know, it's kind of, she probably would have wished for something different if she had known. But, hindsight 2020 and all that stuff, right?
Yeah.
He spent the previous night on the boat so he can get an early start. Mm-hmm. 7 a.m., he was ready to go. He called Donna at 7:01 a.m. She was in Wisconsin at that time, vacationing with some friends.
Yeah, it was like an annual thing she did.
Yeah, she had some buddies, and they always took off. And
going to Wisconsin.
Going to Wisconsin.
Scenic Wisconsin.
Ski and ice fish and drink beer and, I don't know, tip cows or whatever you do. Yeah.
Cheese,
and,
lots of cheese.
Yeah, eat cheese. But told her that he was going to go out scatter mom's ashes and that he was not going to disappear and turn up in Baja under a new name. No, not at all. So he cast off sometime between then and about 7:15 and headed out. From the marina, it's about 2.5 miles west to the Golden Gate Bridge. And then from there, it's about 2.5 more till you get to the open ocean. I know it seems like it's like the ocean's right there, but actually,
it's
not at all. It's a little ways away.
Oh, yeah.
Because it's a big river.
Yeah, well, it's a big inlet. Yeah, river, harbor, whatever you call it. But yeah, from there, like I said, about another 25 miles maybe to Southeast Farallon Island, which is the largest of the chain. There's several in the chain.
Mm-hmm.
And
okay.
Southeast is the big one, and it's the only one that has people on it. And those people are basically government employees who run sort of a...
But it's big enough for people to live on?
Yeah.
Okay.
But it's not like there's an economy. There's just, sure. There's scientists who are right. basically gathering wildlife information and stuff like that.
But it's not but, just like, you but, know, a rock. Like, the you know, it's not like the islands we have in the middle of our river.
No.
Right.
No, it's bigger than that. Yeah. Yeah. It's yeah, big enough to you could build a lighthouse on it and have your light your
it's bigger light than a bread box.
Disappear. Yeah, it's
it
that
wouldn't
big.
Fit in a bread box.
No, it's gotcha. It's big. Actually, I think it does have a lighthouse on it. Huh. Come to think of it.
Okay.
Yeah. But anyway, that's Southeast Farallon Island. So Jim calls Donnie again about 10:30, and the call is relayed to a singular cell tower in Daly City, which is south of San Francisco.
Singular as in like AT&T singular.
Yeah, exactly.
Not, yes. Like, not singular, singular like as one.
The cell carrier.
Yeah. Is that singular or singular?
Singular.
Singular, okay. That would have been due east of his position, therefore the closest one, because he was, you know, way out to sea.
And Daly City's...
Daly City.
Daly City, sorry.
Yeah.
It's on mainland.
Yeah. So it's just south and on the west side of the peninsula, kind of west-ish, not real west, but, you know, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, and he was almost out of cell range, and he just called to say the usual, you know, which is, hey, I'm scattering mom's ashes, and by the way, if I don't come back, it's because I'm in Davy Jones' locker, not in a brothel in Ensenada. No, at all. And I by the way, I'm just kidding. He called to just say the weather was really good. And
probably just to check in. This is my progress. Everything's going well.
Yeah.
You know.
And, yeah, he said, I'm basically out kind of past the last buoy marker for the channel. And there's a little ambiguity there because apparently it's a fairly complicated situation. There's three channels that come together from the ocean. North, south, and west all come together into one, like, 9-mile channel that goes all the way to the Golden Gate Bridge.
Mm-hmm.
And so all the big incoming ships have to follow that incoming channel. So there's all kinds of buoy markers out there. So there's a little ambiguity about exactly which buoy marker he was talking about.
Yeah,
but, you know,
I can see that.
Yeah, there were people that went back and tried to reassemble it, like, really, really intense timeline that, like, you know, noted all of his movements. And they could never totally resolve exactly where he was. But between him saying that and between the cell phone pinging that tower in Daly City, it does appear that he really was on the boat. It's not like he said he was getting on the boat and then just nipped out and jumped on a bus and left town.
Then called when he was in Daly City.
Yeah, and scuttled the boat in the middle of San Francisco Bay, swam ashore, and then just left town. No.
I mean, I guess I can see both ways why it's worth discussing this second call, because he just called her at 7 to basically say, hey, it's looking like a nice day. This is what I'm going to do. You know, love you, whatever. Mm-hmm. And I don't know their relationship, so I don't know if they were the kind of people. I have some friends who are on the phone with their husbands, like,
constantly.
Every 3 hours.
Yeah.
You know, they just, like, they call at lunch. They call at their break. They talk on their phone all the time, which seems excessive to me.
Yeah, those people are annoying.
But I mean, that's how some people are. So if they were that kind of couple, it does make sense that he would call her again and say, hey, I'm leaving cell phone range.
Yeah, I don't know that they were totally that kind of couple, but I think they were on great terms. I think they really cared for each other. And,
right.
And so not at all surprising. And by the way, he was on a sailboat in the middle of Noro, out in the ocean, with not a whole lot to do. So it's like, hey, why don't I make some phone calls?
Right.
You know, I see that too.
I guess what I would say is, like, if it were, I know my fiance well enough to know that if this were us, he would have called me at 7 and said, okay, I'm going to do this today. So I'm going to be out of cell phone range the entire day.
And
would have expected me to just wait until he called me when he got back to land at the end of the day and just assume everything is fine.
Right.
Yeah. Right. And so there are people like that too.
Yeah.
So,
well, you know,
but on the other hand, I can also see how
I don't think
people
it's
might
surprising
think, well,
or
this
unusual.
Is the, like the last time he like ever called his wife. He was trying to say goodbye to her.
And, but it wasn't the last phone call he made.
No,
that's the important
not.
Point.
It's not, but it is also, you know, I guess I can see why it's worth discussing either way.
Yeah, no, I mean, it could be read that way, although he didn't say anything that really stood out in her mind later. He didn't say anything like, honey, you know, I love you so much. I mean, maybe he did, but essentially it was just like, hey, weather's great, you know, and then she says, are you wearing your harness? Because, you know, when you're single-handed, you're supposed to wear a harness.
So you don't fall overboard.
And he said he was wearing his harness. One other thing that may or may not be relevant at all is she said she didn't hear any engine noises, so he was just under sail, not running the diesel. They have a diesel motor on these things. But that's about it for that phone call. And then he also called his daughter at 10:38. That was the last phone call. She had recently had a son. That would be Jim's grandson.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and maybe that's why she didn't pick up the phone, but he did leave her a voicemail. saying kind of the same thing, you know, weather's good, going to go scatter grandma's ashes, there's dolphins all around me, yada,
it's
yada,
beautiful,
yada.
Everything's
it's
the worst.
Beautiful out here, and on, and by the way, goodbye forever, I love you. No, just kidding. He didn't say it. So you could read that way. He's saying goodbye to the most important people of his life. He's calling them on the phone. He's going to go kill himself.
You could.
Yeah, maybe. I don't...
Or you could, again, like you said, you could read it as he was bored in the middle of the ocean.
Yeah, I thought, what the hell? You know, I'm about to run... I mean, I want to make a couple of phone calls. Yeah, why not?
Again, you know, it comes down to, I guess, those different personality types, where I would definitely be that kind of person who would just be like, I am bored as heck. Mm-hmm. I got to call some people. I got to talk to some people. I do not like being alone. I just like... make all these phone calls and talk to all these people. Versus...
I'd have turned off my cell phone at 7:15.
Yeah, I mean, you would have, because I know you well enough to know. you would have placed that last call and turned it off and been like, this is amazing. This ocean is beautiful.
Nobody's
bugging
me.
I love this. Mm-hmm. It's the best. So I guess, you know, part of it comes down to personality types.
Pretty much, yeah.
So it's hard to read into this without knowing him.
Yeah, it is hard to say if that means anything. I don't think it does, but you know, we'll see. We'll talk about that in theories. Generally, I mean, obviously, in when people disappear, suicide is always considered to be a possibility.
Of course.
Yeah, yeah.
Suicide is considered like in almost any case.
Yeah, yeah.
Really?
Yeah, I know. Well, anyway, so we'll talk about that more in the suicide.
Sorry, I'm just trying to set the framework.
Oh, no, that's totally cool. So back to Jim and his little sailing adventure. Apparently the last contact with the cell tower was at 11:50 a.m. Jim's boat cruised out of cell phone range and he was on his own.
And that's expected, right?
Yeah.
That's about the expected timeline.
Yeah, and okay. Yeah, that's not unusual at all. Presumably there was shipping traffic because, as I said, three sea lanes come together, a lot, big port, a lot of traffic.
Mm-hmm.
So there were ships out there, I have no doubt about it. I'm sure they weren't whirling around like snowflakes or anything like that, but there were some.
It's
out there.
It's an active harbor.
Mm-hmm. It is.
But he would be used to that.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. He sailed out there many times.
Yeah.
But that's as far as Jim's course after that, it's pretty much unknown. It's assumed that he made it actually out to the island because a biologist named Brett Hartle was living and working on Southeast Farallon Island at the time, and he reported, and this was after his disappearance hit the news, and mm-hmm. afterwards he thought about it and said, you know, I think I saw his boat.
Mm.
He said he'd seen a boat that might have been Jim's. So he said he'd seen it was either a red or a brown hull. It was hard to tell because it was like over a mile away. So I bet it was really hard to tell.
Yeah. Jim Gray's boat had a red hull.
It had a red hull with kind of a white racing
pinstripe
on the side of it.
Yeah,
kind of thing. And depending on the photo, some photos it looks kind of like really bright red. Other photos it looks kind of more ketchup-y colored.
Yeah.
But
you look like that
say.
In certain photos too.
So I know.
It really
know.
Just depends on
it's
the photo.
True, yeah.
Hard to say, but so it either had a red or a brown hull. It was between Southeast Farallon Island and the Middle Farallon Island, which is 2 miles northwest. He also said he wasn't sure what direction it was going in. He didn't have any reason to think anything unusual was happening.
He was another boat on the water.
Yeah.
He sees them all the time.
Exactly. And so he glanced, saw this boat out there. So he wasn't sure what direction it was going in. He was thinking maybe it was going west or maybe north. He didn't have binoculars. He didn't actually spend a lot of time looking at it. And he also, by the way, wasn't wearing a watch, didn't notice the time. He said it could have been anywhere between noon and 3 p.m. So he didn't know. And after he thought about it, and again, this could be his memory playing tricks, too, because I know my memory messes with me sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Thought about it hard. And then he remembered that the boat's mainsail was up and the jib was furled.
And so the jib is?
The jib is the sail in the front. So there's the main sail, the one in the back, and then the
little triangular one.
And the
one.
Jib is a small triangular one up in the front. When they say furled, that means it's, you know, rolled up, folded up, whatever.
And what
furled,
is that? What does that mean?
That means it's not up. It's not.
No,
it's,
I'm sorry, but like, if
why?
Like, why would you have the jib furled?
One reason I could think of is if you're getting enough wind anyway, and you're single-handedly, and single-handing the boat, you tried to say, it is less work. Because what you got to do...
dealing with one sail.
Yeah, when you go to tack, and say you're heading 45 degrees off the wind, when you go to tack, you bring it around, mm-hmm. and all you got to do is just remember to duck when the main boom comes swinging back across you, and it will, and that's it. Whereas if you have a jib up, then what that means, what you got to do is when you tack, you got to get up there, let the rope loose, and actually probably could do all this from the cockpit because I think this boat was set up for single-handed sailing.
I would assume.
Yeah, you have to let the one rope.
It was a racing boat, yeah.
Yeah, so you got to let the one rope loose on the one side, and then when the jib comes around to the other side, you got to take it back in and wind it up in the winch and tighten it and everything.
Mm.
So if you're feeling a little lazy, then with the mainsail, again, all you got to do is just let that boom go boom one side and over to the other, and that's it.
Okay. And so you would do that if you were like, if it were leisure and you were getting enough wind and you weren't in a hurry. And...
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And if you didn't have any hands. And of course, you know, if you're out there with some people and you're all kind of bored, then actually that kind of stuff can be kind of fun.
Yeah.
Keeps you occupied, but apparently he wasn't really into it that day.
Okay.
But that's okay. He wasn't
if
in a huge hurry.
If that was him.
If that was even him, which we don't really know, do we?
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
But anyway, so Brett remembered, he thought at least, that the mainsail was up and the jib was furled. Therefore, he decided that he must have seen the boat's starboard side. And that means that the boat must have been moving north when he saw it. So therefore, okay, it maybe had rounded Southeast Farallon Island, was heading between the two and headed north. But again, you know, I'm not sure I trust this. Not saying I don't trust Brett, but memory's a funny thing. You know?
It also could have totally been a different boat.
Yep. It could have been a different boat, and it was over a mile away.
Yeah.
So all these factors make me question this one just a little bit. But yeah. Sounds like it probably was his boat.
But he's not the only person who came forward saying he thought he might have seen the boat.
And there were other boats seen that day, by the way. This was just the only red boat. There was another. They found a sailor that was on a whale watching boat in the area who saw three sailboats that day, two white ones and one red. So the red one might have been Jim.
But also might not
have
been.
Which would have put it in a different place.
Uh-huh. But it's not 100% certain, but anyway. But that probably, those probably were the last sightings of it. Donna reported Jim missing to the Coast Guard that night, about 8:30 or so, when he didn't come back. Again, she's in Wisconsin, but she was expecting him to call.
Right. Mm-hmm.
So she calls the marina, the harbor master checks the berth, the sailboat ain't back. So she calls the Coast Guard and reports him missing. They started their search within a few hours. They sent a couple of boats out. Eventually, a helicopter and a C-130 plane took off around midnight, 1 a.m., and they started scouring the area between the Farallon Islands and the Golden Gate. And, of course, they had, like, you know, radar and stuff like that and infrared. So, you know, there really was a purpose to going out and buzzing
around.
Right.
In the dark, you use things besides your eyeballs.
Yeah, you kind of have to. Yeah. But they were out there looking, and, of course, they didn't find anything. They kept adding resources to the search. They searched for about 5 days. They kept adding more resources to it. Eventually, they scoured the California coast from the Oregon border south to about Santa Barbara, which is quite a long stretch of coastline.
Pretty significant, yeah.
Yeah, and boaters were alerted to look for wreckage, and their C-130 planes flew grid patterns like further and further out from shore. And I've got a map here of some of the grids that they did. You guys might have seen this one. These are some of the grid searches that they did.
Yeah.
Yeah, so you guys can see this. You can't see it out there, but...
But you can hear it.
But you can hear it. You can totally hear it. But they flew a lot of grid patterns, and they pretty comprehensively, you know, covered the area. Didn't find anything.
I mean, that seems unusual.
To not find
depending
anything.
Depending on the scenario.
Like anything.
Yeah, exactly. Because if the boat sank...
there's
usually,
floaty bits.
Yeah, there's floaty bits. Exactly.
Everything on a boat is designed to float.
Yeah.
I know. There's what they call flotsam. Yeah.
Yeah.
Or if that's, which is sailorese for floaty bits.
Yeah.
And yeah, there should have been at least a couple of boat cushions or something.
Yeah.
And when they were out there, they spotted other wreckage that was from other boats or the ships. They found other stuff.
Yeah.
Just nothing from his boat.
Which is, okay.
Nothing at all. So they were able to find small objects floating in the ocean.
Okay.
But nothing from his boat at all, which was a little weird.
Yeah.
I think they covered something like 40,000 square miles of ocean.
Wow.
Yeah, quite a bit. And meantime, Jim Gray's high-tech friends have heard about all this. They're starting to get involved, and I'm going to really shorten this down quite a bit. Microsoft provided pretty much unlimited funding for the private searches that they did, and they did a lot of stuff, including flying over with airplanes and helicopters and stuff. And eventually, I think his wife hired a ship that had side scanning sonar and all kinds of resources like that to scan the entire ocean bottom and everything in the area.
Where they could.
Because
it gets too deep eventually.
Yeah, I mean, there is a continental shelf out there. Yeah, there
is.
It's
man, actually, where was James Cameron?
Yeah, I know. he must have been off somewhere making a movie. Yeah, Microsoft and Google, though, they worked together to get their hands on as much satellite imagery as they could. The Canadian Space Agency diverted a satellite equipped with radar to fly over the search area. Two private satellites from Digital Globe and GOI were also repositioned.
That's crazy.
Yeah, I know. That's a lot of resources. NASA sent an ER-2 plane, which I guess is a kind of like a commercial spy plane. It's a trainer that they use. And it's equipped with...
That's like a lot of resources.
Yeah.
I hope you guys know that if I ever go missing... that I expect at least this kind of reaction.
Oh, totally, totally. No, when they hear that.
I want Elon Devin Musk
from,
to be.
Yeah, Devin from Thinking Sideways is missing. Yeah. Oh, my God. You know, yeah. Call Google. Call Amazon. Call
PayPal.
Yeah.
Call Steve. He's down at the bar. We got to get him out there.
Call Patreon. Yeah.
Call Patreon. Yeah. They'll mobilize.
Taryn will totally get it to happen.
Oh, people, I pledge 25 cents for the search.
Start a Kickstarter. It'll be perfect.
Yeah. But of course, at this point, though, they have a huge amount of satellite imagery to look for, or to look through. So some of the mucky mucks at Amazon decided to, because of course they were involved in this too, they decided to use this Amazon service called Mechanical Turk.
Which is my favorite.
Yeah,
Mechanical Turk
that
is
one?
Cool.
When I like first moved back to Portland and was like super underemployed, I did Mechanical Turking for money.
You?
Yeah.
Oh, it's I just like the history of the name.
I love the history of the name too, but yeah, I was like, it's a pretty good service overall, but definitely for something like this where you can just get a ton of volunteers to just... scour stuff.
Yeah, exactly.
It's crazy.
That's kind of what this is for. It's like, you know, it's like when you have something to do that it requires a lot of repetition, but you don't want to sit down and actually build machines to do it or write a fantastic amount of computer software to do it.
Well, and it would take way longer than it would to just give it to the public.
Well, and it also turns out that machines are only so good. They will do what you tell them, but they won't make
more.
Any leaps. Did you hear this stuff about all of this imagery from space that they were having some software application scan looking for new planets and stuff like that? Or the looking for changes in the intensity of stars? Because then they could tell if something had passed in front of it.
Yeah, like a planet or a space station or
an whatever.
Alien craft. Or,
so the software is returning nothing, basically nothing. And they're like, well, this is a little weird. They give it to all these volunteers, and these volunteers start finding thousands of these instances because the computer, it was doing what it was told, and it wasn't saying, well, let me check five, you know, however much ago. And so it's... So it's always better sometimes with things like this to actually have a person to do it who does pattern recognition much better than a machine
does. This is the sort of thing also that it would have been really nice to have been able, like 2007 is a little too early, but if it happened today, like they would mobilize Reddit and Web Sleuths, right? Those are two communities where if you just say, hey, we're trying to find this person, here's like literally millions of images. Please, you guys go through this and see if you can find any anomalies. Those two communities together are so amazing. I mean, to a fault, like oftentimes there's like a lot of false stuff that happens out of that. We've talked about this a lot. Mm-hmm. But, but I mean, that's the sort of thing that would have been great in this situation as well. But I think that Amazon thinking to use Mechanical Turk community for this sort of thing is phenomenal.
Made a lot of sense.
It's
great.
Yeah.
So they divvied up all these thousands and thousands of images and just parceled it out. They put out a call for volunteers and they got like 12,000 volunteers, which is pretty good.
Yeah.
Spent a weekend looking through about 30,000 square miles of water. And they came up with a few possible sightings. And then, of course, they had, you know, this is where it's good to have high-tech buddies involved, because the problem is the pictures were taken, like, well, it's Monday morning, the pictures were taken last Friday or Thursday or whatever. So they got these digital wizards to come in and say, okay, well, you know, we're going to, like, write this software in a real huge hurry to chart the ocean currents and the winds and everything else, you know, and
figure out where the things
exactly
that were ID'd
where those things would be now. But alas, even with all that, when they got out to check out the few possibilities they found in the photographs, there was nothing there. And I'm really kind of understating the complexity of the search and all the technical expertise that was brought to bear. There's a really good article in Wired. I sent you guys a link to it. I don't know if you guys read it.
I love Wired articles on things like this.
Yeah.
Really, I mean, like...
super long form.
Oh,
it's
yeah,
a long
but
article,
they're
but,
really
yeah.
well written all the time, and they go into such incredible detail.
Oh, yeah.
But I also still feel like I totally understand everything they're saying.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's rare to find a Wired article on something that we're covering. But like when we do, anytime any of you links to Wired, I'm just like, yes, that is the one. If I like, if I only have to read one, it's going to be that one.
What is the other one that does a really good job that I like? Is Motherboard under Vice now? Is that Motherboard is a website and they have all these long form things.
It might be under.
And I think they're part of Vice now, but I always like theirs because it's the same thing. It's just like laid out so much detail.
Well, there was the Lizanne Froon and Chris Kremer's one I think that was on.
Was that wired?
It might have been.
I think it might have even been wired. Yeah. It was really long. But anyway, I think definitely if you guys are interested in this, read that article.
No, that's a good article. And it's got lots and lots of detail about the search and all the various people that were involved. But the point is for me in our story here is that when the Coast Guard devotes the resources that they did, and they devoted a lot of resources to look for Jim's boat.
Mm-hmm.
Alone. For a single person.
And by the way, the Coast Guard, they're good at what they do.
Yeah. I mean,
yeah.
They are really good. It's their job or
something. Like, yeah,
they have one job.
Exactly. I mean, those guys are really
guard
good.
Guard the coast.
Yeah. Yeah. They're, and
then find lost sailors. I guess that's two jobs.
Okay, fine.
Yeah. But then they're also joined by, Google, Microsoft, Amazon, Oracle, NASA,
granted, we are talking about the 2007 versions of these things, not the 2017 versions of these things.
But still,
even in 2007, they are
the tech giants.
They are.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Big time. They were giant back then.
And even with all of that, they just didn't find literally a single piece.
Yeah, didn't find squat. Yeah. They didn't find
not even single, like an arm floaty.
Not even an arm floaty. Not even a beer cozy. Yeah.
That seems crazy.
Yeah, not a thing. They
doesn't that seem crazy
nothing.
To you, Steve?
Well, yeah.
A little bit.
It's a little puzzling. It's,
doesn't it seem crazy to you, Joe?
It does seem a little crazy. Yeah, a little bit. Hmm. So what the hell happened? What happened to Jim Gray and the Tenacious?
Really?
How could they have vanished without a trace? Because I got to admit, that's a little spooky. I know it ain't Halloween month, but it's still a little spooky.
Aliens.
I like it.
Yeah.
Okay,
your hair
we're done.
Is not done properly today for that for that statement.
True.
Okay, let's talk about some theories. I'm going to put these out in no particular order, really.
You've unranked them?
No, not from bad to good or good to bad. But starting from the front, let's talk about suicide very briefly because I don't think this is a good theory.
I agree.
I just don't think so. There was everybody who knew him said no.
It didn't seem to fit his personality, the type of guy that he was.
Yeah, not at all. And he showed no signs of depression. Actually, he was very active and had very with it and yada, yada, yada. So, I think we could just ignore this one. Another one that's been put forward by some of Jim's fellow sailors, this actually did appear in a few articles, was orcas. They thought that perhaps some orcas had...
Killer whales.
Yeah, killer whales. They mistook the Tenacious for a dolphin. One of their fellow boaters did say he had a near miss with an orca one time, but I think probably it might have been the orca was just playing chicken with him.
Yeah.
Because I don't think they
orcas are jerks.
They can be.
Okay, did either of you, this was a movie from like the 70s or 80s, and it may well have just been called Orca, but there was a killer whale movie where an orca chased a boat and eventually sank it to take revenge out on it. And I think these people saw that movie.
It could have been,
probably.
Yeah. There's only, as far
it's
as I
really
know,
terrible
one,
movie, by the way.
Yeah, I only know of one documented incident of an orca attacking a whale and sinking it, which was in 1972 near the Galapagos Islands.
Mm-hmm.
And but otherwise, attacks by wild killer whales on humans. I mean, the ones that are in captivity, that's a whole different ball of wax.
Well, they're provoked.
Yeah, sometimes they kill their trainers when they're accidentally
They're in jail.
Yeah, exactly. But the actual wild ones, it's extremely rare. I mean, really, really rare.
Well, their prey is like half the size, if that, of a boat. Like whales aren't that
they're
dumb.
They're like 1-2% the size of
they're intelligent.
I think a boat, a 40-foot boat, is probably almost about the size of we're gonna get like a million emails about this. I don't know how big orcas are, but I would say it's closer to the size of an orca than it is something that an orca would kill.
And if you want to sink that thing as an orca, you can't pick up an orca tire iron and just hammer on it. You gotta hammer
it with your head
you
or
gotta
your
use
teeth.
Your forehead on it.
Well,
yeah,
they
exactly
have pretty good teeth,
but still.
But yeah, I think that's a silly.
I think it's absurd. Too.
I don't think you're silly. I think
this is the Moby
silly.
Dick theory. Is what this is right here.
Moby Dick, the musical. Moby Dick, it's a whale of a tale.
I never heard it. Good singing, but
Good singing, but
good singing, but no contract.
Okay, great.
another theory that's out there: a rogue wave. You've heard of these things that the waves do go rogue.
Talked about that in a lighthouse thing once, right?
Yeah.
Oh, many of Joe's stories, because Joe's stories always take place at sea.
So rogue whale, whatever happened, bad childhood, it goes rogue. But at the same time, nobody else reported any, you know, there was a lot of traffic in the area. Nobody else reported a rogue wave out there.
But, well, the thing is about rogue waves is that they're unexpected, yeah, and they don't have to be extremely long-lived.
Yeah.
I mean, if it's something that's coming in off of the continental shelf, I was looking for that word,
yeah,
and hits his boat and then, you know, subsides before it goes to another, or gets spotted by another boat, that's entirely possible.
Yeah.
At which point, his boat, if it was under sail or under motor, it's a diesel engine?
Yeah, diesel, yeah.
Suddenly, God, I'm really bad
under
a thousand sail tonight.
But
if it was under motor, it would have just, under power, it would have just kept going.
Yeah, yeah.
Which would explain a lot of things.
Yeah, and actually, it's a ballasted sailboat, so, you know, it's even if it had actually turned turtle, which is sailorese for just turning all the way over,
uh-huh,
it's going to come back up. It's it's got a 4-ton keel on the bottom of it.
Yeah,
so it's
this kind of boat is
up.
Meant to be really hard to, what is it
Keeling.
Thank you.
When the boat leans way over.
Yeah, it's actually really hard to do.
They're built for that kind of thing. Yeah. And so, yeah, I'm not really buying the rogue wave. I mean, the rogue wave could have swept Jim overboard, but I think the boat probably would have survived it.
But he was wearing a harness.
He was wearing a harness. He said that to his wife.
I have told my wife I was using a lot of safety equipment. Mm. Yes, honey, I am wearing my safety glasses. Mm. That's why
I'm
squinting right now.
Yeah.
You asked for pictures.
Yeah, this stuff just sort of took a detour around my safety glasses. embedded itself in my eyeball. I told
it's the magic shrapnel.
Yeah.
It went through them.
Yeah.
Well,
what's the next theory?
So much for the rogue wave. I'm not buying it. Another theory that's out there that his fellow boaters again put out when some reporters went by and asked them what they thought had happened was that, yeah, maybe he just checked out, decided to go start a new life. They thought he was probably down in Baja just drinking margaritas and, you know, reading the papers about himself and having a good laugh about the whole thing. And maybe he repainted his boat, painted black, white, whatever, and just changed his name and is, you know, even living today in somewhere in Mexico.
I kind of like this theory. Yeah.
I tend to like theories like this because it's like the least painful for everyone.
Yeah.
Actually, I'm going to wait till Joe gets to the end. I have some thoughts on this.
I like
this one.
You like this one? Okay. Well, yeah. I mean, and Jim is or was a clever guy, depending on whether he's alive or dead.
Sure.
A very smart guy. You know, if anybody could have snuck away, fooled everybody and changed his name and been in hiding forever, you know, it probably would have been him. And there is some support on Reddit. Believe it or not, in May 2012, which was 3 months after Jim Gray was declared legally dead.
Because it's a five-year waiting period.
In California, apparently, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And a user by the name of, quote, Tom Gold, unquote, posted a message saying that he, quote, made it appear to my family that I died on a boat trip in the Pacific, unquote. And he also said that he was, quote, dead in the United States, unquote, and that he was living in Kenya under a false name.
Yeah, this guy could have just pulled a Rebecca Cormian.
Yeah, Corium?
Corium.
Yeah.
I will say Jim does not seem like the kind of guy who would have referred to his expensive sailboat as a boating trip.
A boat trip?
A boat trip.
Yeah, maybe not.
Right?
Yeah.
Seems like he would have said, like, I faked a death on my sailing contraption.
Well, maybe if Tom Gold was indeed was indeed trying to pretend to be Jim Gray, although he didn't actually literally claim to be Jim Gray,
right?
He maybe it may have been channeling a different narrative voice.
Mm-hmm.
So that would explain that.
Fair enough. Okay.
Yeah. But there was a Redditite that
Redditor.
Redditite, whatever.
Tomato. Tomato.
Yeah, this guy actually did a little research. Again, he didn't say he was Jim Gray. Tom Gold did not say that, but he compared his statements to the circumstances around various boating disappearances and came up with, guess what, Jim Gray. It matched that case, and no other one really matched it as well. So was Tom Gold actually Jim Gray?
And the account that used the name Tom Gold, they referred to it as a throwaway.
It was
account.
A throwaway, yeah.
It was created and then disappeared.
I love you guys so much.
Yeah.
Not everybody is a Reddit aficionado, Devin.
I know.
Yeah. You're wait, tell me the boaty terms. But everybody knows Reddit.
No, I just like that you're like, I think they referred to it as a throwaway account.
I can't remember what the article said.
No, I know. It's just the number of accounts on Reddit that are like, throwaway. 1, 2, 12, 5 is like astonishing because everybody has a throwaway account.
Mm-hmm.
See, I don't use Reddit. I don't know.
I know. That's why I said I love you guys.
You got a throwaway account?
Yeah.
Is that kind of like a throwaway piece that the cops carry?
Yeah.
Yeah, same thing. Uh-huh. Yeah.
It's a dummy account.
It can be ditched. It can't be traced to you.
Totally. Yeah. Makes sense. It actually is, yeah.
Yeah, I like it.
Mm-hmm.
I got to get me one of them.
Yeah. Okay, so back to Tom Gold, though.
Oh, yeah, but back to our friend Tom Gold. Yeah, as far as I know, he never posted again, at least not under that name. The thing about it is like, you know, you guys might disagree. I think that Jim Gray, had nothing to gain by starting over again in a foreign country with nothing. Although maybe he would have thought of it as a huge adventure. I don't know. But, you know, what he walked away from, what he's walking away from is he had his wife, friends, family. He had his new grandson. He had money. He liked his career, loved his career from everything I've heard. And he had a house on Telegraph Hill. Hello.
Do you want me to go? Do you want to go?
Go ahead.
Yeah. I'm just going to go. And all I want to say about this is that, like, no matter how good things look on paper, we never know what an individual is experiencing.
Yeah, that's true.
I mean, you guys know this. Like, I quit my job recently, and it was like, I was getting paid way more than I should have been getting paid. And like all of these different things. And I quit my job because like on paper, it was perfect. It was awesome. It was a really sweet deal, but I just hated it.
Yeah.
And I would say that there's no way to be able to tell as an outsider, even probably his wife, probably as long, because he probably wouldn't express that to her.
Mm.
There's no way for somebody who isn't him to know exactly what was going on in his life and what he was feeling. And maybe it is. I mean, you know, we don't know. He might have had a private account that he had, what, like a cool $1 million that he took out in cash and he took with him to Mexico. And he's been living large. You know, you go to Thailand, $1 million lasts you a lifetime.
Mm-hmm.
I mean,
go to Bolivia, it lasts you 10 lifetimes.
Yeah. I mean, really, there are so many places. So we don't know for sure. I'm not saying this is like a perfect theory that like,
no,
but I will say that I agree that on paper, his life seems absolutely phenomenal and perfect, but you just never really know, you know?
I wouldn't say his life was perfect. I mean, he had a 40-foot boat. I mean, perfect is like a 400-foot boat.
Excuse me. Okay. Yeah. On paper, his life is pretty dang good.
Pretty good. It's pretty good.
Yeah. But, you know, I guess it's, unless you live his life and you are the exact same human as him, it's hard to tell.
Yeah.
That's why I like this theory. I also like this theory because it means he's like just alive. Still alive somewhere, like having a good time.
Yeah.
So, Devin?
Yeah.
I'm really kind of upset. Are you hacking my email? Because I wrote all this out and you just stole the entire thing.
Wrote out the story about me quitting my job?
No.
Oh, okay.
No, but I was actually going down the same road.
But I mean,
going to say, is, and you touched on this briefly, is that if he indeed was fed up with it all, and we've all sat around and said, you know, God, I'm tired of this crap. Well, he could have very easily have said, you know what, in a year, I'm out of here. And every week he went down to the ATM and he got $300 in cash.
Mm-hmm.
And every day for a year, he did that. And I'm not going to do the math on that because we got in trouble for doing that kind of math off the back of my real quick. But the point is, he could have a huge wad of cash sitting in the hull of that boat.
Yeah.
So when he took off, he paid, you know, somebody $100,000 he would have had $100,000.
109.
Yeah. He'd have had a bunch of money on him, paid him, like you said, to do whatever, and then just took off because $100,000 is a whole lot of pesos.
Mm-hmm.
And he just goes and does whatever he wants. And it's a lack of stress at that point. I mean, his life may have been unbearably stressful. And you go, you know what?
Yeah,
I'm going to get up when I want to get up. I'm going to go to sleep when I want to sleep. I'm going to drink as much as I want or eat as much as I want. Nobody's going to tell me. I don't have anything to hold me back. And just, I'm only going to make it for 5 more years, but hey, they're going to be scot-free 5 years.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it could be. And you know, but
I don't think it's as dismissible as you do because it looks good, but that doesn't mean it is good.
Yeah. Yeah.
On the other hand, Guy Kawasaki, who's this like, he's this guy who goes around and speaks all the time, but he was like one of the Steve Jobs Apple innovators. You know, he talks a lot about his time in early Apple and how it was just like this, they flew first class everywhere. It was this free for all. So, I mean, I don't know that his life, I don't know. It's hard. This is one of those theories, right? Where it's, I'm just, yeah. I keep arguing both sides, mm-hmm. but.
Yeah, no, it accounts for a few things, you know. I probably didn't mention that he had two radios on the boat. Did not manage to get a distress call out if he was sinking or anything like that. Didn't manage to deploy his life raft, which I think he didn't have the automatic, the kind that deploy and automatically inflate when they hit the water.
Mm-hmm.
He had the kind, he had to pull it out.
He had to pull the cord.
Yeah, no.
Like my lawnmower?
Not even that. It's the kind you had to, like, you know, actually stick a cord up into it and actually, like, stomp it with your foot, you know, use a foot pump to pump it up, you know, and stuff. So, and then his EPIRB didn't go off, which is this thing that goes off when it hits, when your boat sinks, it deploys when it hits the water and
it's
turns on.
It's like a little signal, right?
Yeah, it sends out a signal. Yeah. That didn't go off.
Yes,
and again, no wreckage.
Satellite distress.
And so the whole suicide thing would explain all of that. It explains the lack of distress call, wreckage, EPIRB signal, everything.
Well, the other life.
Yeah, yeah.
But
yeah.
There's a number of things that explain that, though.
Yeah, but there are other things that might explain that, too.
Yeah. Yeah. But this is the easy one to explain all that, because it explains why none of that stuff was triggered.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it does. And another one that might explain that is our next theory. So I'm going to give this one, for me, the leaving to start a new life, I'm going to give it a fail, but a soft fail.
Like a D?
Yeah, I give it a D.
Like a D minus?
Yeah.
Like an almost failing, but like still kind of passing?
Entirely, I think it's possible.
It gets a 2.5 out of 5 stars.
Listen, that's a D minus.
Yeah.
That's a thinking sideways-esque rating.
Yeah, I don't know.
What's our next one?
Yeah, and sorry. It could be, too, that, you know, he had so much to live for, he had his new grandson, but maybe the new grandson finally came along, and then the kid was just ugly. And he just decided, okay,
aww,
I'm not cut out to be a grandpa, I'm leaving.
It's possible.
But I'm still going to give it a D.
So what's the next theory?
Our next theory is he had some sort of accident or something that incapacitated him, like a heart attack or a stroke. He fell and smashed his head, and then, you know, was just basically... didn't quite kill him, but it knocked him out for a long period of time,
mm-hmm.
long enough. But
maybe he just
fell overboard, you know? I mean, any one of these things. The Tenacious was equipped with an autopilot, and odds are pretty good that Gray would have probably at some point during the day gotten bored with steering the boat and turned the autopilot on. And so, and obviously, if he wanted to say go below and go to the head, maybe make some tea, he would have to set the autopilot. And so... what if the autopilot was on and he becomes incapacitated for some reason, like I said, heart attack, whatever, and the boat was just, say, set to go west, and it just keeps on going west.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, someday, we're going to be talking about this once driverless cars become a thing.
Yeah.
Why did they drive into the Grand Canyon? Well, the car was programmed to just drive west.
Yeah, yeah, I know, exactly. So, I could just see that. They'll pull one over, and it'll have a mummy behind the wheel. They found that. They actually found a sailboat just last year that had this German guy who was below decks, and he was mummified.
Yeah.
Did you see that article?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, it was creepy as hell.
Sea air had dried him out like a prune.
Uh-huh. Yeah, and he was just hunched over his chart table, and
I would say, you know, the sort of idea of a heart attack or a stroke or something like that, again, if we're talking about somebody who's in the tech sector in the early 2000s, he's working for Microsoft. He's apparently like super brilliant. It is possible also that it was super, super stressful.
Yeah, it could have
been. And, you know, it's possible he just, you know, keeled over on accident.
Yeah, I mean,
or maybe even like motor wasn't running. I was going to say like even like a carbon monoxide.
We don't know that actually.
We don't know if he was truly under sail or if the
engine was running.
Or both. I mean, you can do both at the same time.
Yeah, so I mean, that's one of the things that I've always been like, well, he may not have been up there using the sail. He may have just said, screw it, and turned on the engine.
Maybe he turned on the engine and turned on the autopilot, you know, and everything, and just had the whole kit, you know, thing going and just said, oh, I'm going to take a nap. You know, mm-hmm. Or whatever, and
have a drink.
Yeah, yeah, and then he has a stroke, and bam! Next mm-hmm. thing you know, he's dead, and his boat is 1,000 miles away from shore.
Yeah, and that would put the boat pretty solidly outside of any kind of search area, right?
Well, it depends on when they started searching and how far out they went,
and the tides and all that stuff.
Depends on a lot of factors. I was going to talk about that a little bit more later.
But okay.
It just depends on how far out they flew in the
we'll
initial
wait.
Searches.
Yeah.
But it explains why no trace of the boat was found because, it didn't sink, so there wouldn't be any flotsam. There wouldn't be any distress signal or anything like that.
Eventually, there would be flotsam, but by that point, nobody would be looking for it.
Well, by that time, too, assuming the boat goes out, say, 1,000 or 2 miles into the Pacific and then sinks, well, the flotsam ain't going to wind up at the California coast, most likely. Not likely at all. But, of course, it could be that the boat would just sail across the Pacific without mishap. That's kind of unlikely. The kind of autopilot he's got, there's two kinds of autopilots that you can get on your sailboat. One is the kind that uses no power. It uses like a wind vane.
Yeah.
And you know the kind I'm talking about?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I do.
And so
somehow.
Yeah. And so what that does is that maintains your heading relative to the wind.
Yeah.
So if the wind is coming straight from the north and you're heading west, it's 90 degrees, and then the wind shifts, say 45 degrees, well, your heading is going to shift 45 degrees.
Yeah.
But it's going to basically keeping you in the same angle relative to the wind. The other kind is what he had on the Tenacious, was the electronic kind, where you can set a compass bearing, and then what it will do is it's connected to the rudder, the main mast, and everything. And so it will turn the rudder to keep you going in the right direction, and if the wind shifts, it'll actually let out rope or pull rope in or whatever.
Fancy.
It's very fancy.
Yeah.
A little harder on the batteries. I mean, so, you know, if he did have the diesel going when he had his accident or whatever it was, his mishap, then obviously the autopilot's going to keep going a lot longer.
Oh, yeah.
Because otherwise the autopilot's going to drain the battery. I don't know how quickly. I actually called a sailing place here in town, and they were busy and were promised to call me back, and they didn't. But
surprise.
Yeah, I know, surprise. But I was going to ask them that. How long would your battery go for?
And probably not that long, because, listen, I've been on houseboats where the refrigerator dang near drained the batteries overnight.
Uh-huh.
I mean, they're typically the equivalent of 3 to 6 car batteries linked together.
Yeah. I don't think that the autopilot would have been nearly as big of a drain on the battery as a refrigerator.
Right.
No.
But it still
would have drained a little.
It would have been.
Like a radio, probably.
Yeah, and apparently a lot of it depends on just conditions. If for example, it's just a steady light wind and everything like that.
The autopilot doesn't have to do much.
The autopilot doesn't have to do much. But if, on the other hand, if the wind is gusty, changing all the time, it's just working constantly, it's going to drain your battery quickly.
Mm-hmm.
Then again, though, if you turn on your diesel and your diesel is going and recharging the battery, then hey, you could actually go for a couple of days, maybe several days.
Maybe.
Yeah. Yeah. So I got to give this one a maybe.
Okay.
Not
so like a C plus?
Yeah. C plus, B minus, something like that. Yeah.
Okay.
Maybe even a B. I don't know.
I think B you're getting into a much higher than a maybe range there.
Yeah.
You're grading on a weird curve.
Yeah. I would say a C is like a maybe, a B is like a probably, an A is like a
so like 2 3/4 stars.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'd say this one gets
like a generation Y kind of rating. What? I said the 2.5 was us. So I...
Oh, got it. I was very confused. Oh.
Somebody's got to like publish a table that's got a conversion table for all the different podcasts and their rating systems.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So what's next?
This is another theory that the Coast Guard had. They actually checked this one out, which is that he could have been run over by a freighter. Which does happen.
I mean, yes, but
not often.
Yeah, well, you know, there's a lot of traffic. Like I said, there's 4 major ports in San Francisco Bay. There's like San Francisco, mm-hmm. and there's Oakland, the big ones. A couple more, and then there's what else? There's like Sacramento and is it Stockton? I think
there's a whole, no pun intended, a boatload of them up and down the coastline.
Yeah, but just in the bay or through the bay, there's 6 ports there. So that's a huge amount of ship traffic coming mm-hmm. and going, and it's not unheard of for a big ship to run over a smaller one.
Of course. The rule is the smaller ship has to make way.
Oh, yeah.
Because it's easier.
The
big ship.
Yeah, because you're the more agile of the two. So little ship, get out of way. Big ship, keep going through.
Yeah.
That's how it happens.
This well, 100% of the time, these things remind me of that story where it's like the U.S. Navy ship and the what turns out to be a lighthouse.
Uh-huh.
Do you know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, you must give way.
No, we are the U.S. Navy, and they're like, okay, we're a lighthouse, so it's your choice. Like,
your call,
do what
buddy.
You want.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
That always reminds me of this. I'm so sorry.
Speaking of the U.S. Navy, though, I mean, the U.S. Navy just recently had proved that it was having a hard time
avoiding
collisions, too. I mean, you've heard about those two well-publicized incidents in the past year.
Yeah.
Extremely well-publicized. Yeah. And apparently other people have a hard time avoiding huge ships because there's even a book written about it. I don't know if you guys have heard of that one.
Yes.
How to avoid boats.
How to avoid huge ships. It's on Amazon. It's got over 1,400 reviews.
Oh, yeah.
So it's obviously a very important topic.
It is. Like $150 bucks or something silly?
I think it's cheap.
You can get it used for like $95. But I think brand new, it's like $250, yeah. Something like that.
Yeah, the e-book version is $10.
The big ships are supposed to have radar on them, of course. They should have been able to see them on radar, but that assumes somebody is actually watching the radar set.
Yeah. Again, having worked on a cruise ship, I shouldn't probably say this, but I'm going to say it anyway. Like I said, I've said this before. I was friends with the first mate, and sometimes you'd go up to the bridge, and you just get in a conversation with everybody up there. And suddenly you realize the dude who's supposed to be watching the radar is sitting there talking to you, like maintaining eye contact, and you're like, well...
Aren't you supposed to be looking at that?
Are we going to run into an iceberg or like what's going to happen here?
Yeah.
So,
that's no, I turn on the speakers. It'll be fine. It'll make a noise.
Yeah. I mean,
a lot of the shipping companies kind of understaff their boats because sailors cost money.
They sure do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so,
why do that when you can get a mechanical Turk to do it?
Exactly. So, having a guy stationed on the bow looking out front, that's not necessarily the case.
Iceberg.
Yeah, not necessarily the case. Having a guy on the bridge looking at the radars. No, maybe not.
Maybe
he was in the head. Or
it does seem like it would be hard for Jim to have missed a ship that big.
It does seem like it would be hard.
Unless he had an accident.
I was about to say, unless this runs in tandem with like the last theory.
But then it doesn't explain why none of the floaty boaty bits didn't show up.
He could have,
if it's a combination of the last theory, he could have gone, let's say, 400 or 500 miles out.
I guess that's true, yeah.
And then got run over, and then all the flotsam and the bits and pieces, they're going to spread around. They're not going to be in the search area.
Or maybe he gets plowed over, not even that far out. He gets plowed over, and maybe he wasn't dead of a heart attack or anything, but he was just high on shrooms or something like that, you know?
You made that up.
He had a beard. He lived in San Francisco.
You have a beard. You live in Portland.
Oh, good point. Okay. maybe he gets plowed over and all the floaty bits that would have floated get all sliced and diced up in the props and the freighter, and so they don't float. So maybe that. I don't know.
Mm. It seems like at least one floaty bit would have floated.
Still, it does seem unlikely that neither vessel noticed the other. Again, it still happens. The U.S. freaking Navy, big ship, has a collision with a big freaking, container ship.
Yeah.
How the hell could that have happened?
It's physics.
I guess. I don't
some
know.
Some black each hole other. Situation.
I'm pretty sure some heads rolled in that particular
probably,
situation,
yeah.
huh?
But
the Coast Guard was all over that. They did actually, they checked all the records of every ship that came and left the harbor on that day.
Yeah.
And they even, some of them had left the harbor, and they were clear across the ocean back in Japan or wherever, and they actually had local authorities go check their bows just to look for scratches, red paint, things like that, and nothing.
Okay.
That's why they painted their hulls red.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Never notice.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, it's a ship's crew, actually, to avoid liability, they might paint over all the scratches and the red paint and stuff like that, too. I mean, so it's even though I consider this to be kind of unlikely,
it doesn't seem like, I mean, you would check like a little below the water level, and it seems like it'd be hard to paint unless you threw your ship in dry dock.
Well, no, not necessarily, but you got to remember that the cargo that is in the ship will dictate where the water line is on it a degree. So
if
it is empty when they paint it and then it gets checked when it is fully loaded, the scratches they didn't paint are well below the water line and therefore won't be seen.
That's fair.
Yeah, you'll see on a lot of the modern ones, just about all of them, they had that bulbous bow thing going on. They're not like a traditional line of a ship.
It's so ugly.
Yeah, it is ugly, but a lot of those, when they're empty, that thing is sticking up out of the water.
Yeah.
Noticeably so.
Yep.
And, yeah.
Yeah.
So, I would have to say...
I still like this Left for a New Life better, but...
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
I like the next theory.
Pirates.
Pirates.
Well, who doesn't love
pirates?
Anything.
Yeah.
I've got my hat on now.
Around.
Yeah. And actually...
Ask us to do anything.
Oh, go ahead.
We'll just tell
you're
you.
You're in a singing mood tonight.
Yeah, totally sing.
Is. The new job is obviously having an effect on
it's
Devin.
It's a good one.
Obviously, it's a good, better mood than the usual.
Yeah. Yeah. Not grumpy anymore. It's true.
Hey, that's good for
might
us.
Might be
good
this can of wine, too, yeah. But who knows?
It's a whole new podcast. Yeah. But
yeah,
anyway,
pirates.
Yeah, they're not unheard of. I mean, and actually taking over small boats and robbing them, taking their boat and selling it, that kind of thing. It's not unheard of in many parts of the world. It's not too common on the west coast of the U.S.
Yeah, but it's a little. It's also a little boat. Like,
it's not a cheap boat.
Yeah.
It's not a. It's a not like a crazy boat. Expensive one though either, is it?
No, yeah, they're not actually the. By this point, 2007, they were selling for reasonably cheap.
Couple hundred K?
Oh, less than that.
Okay.
Yeah. I actually checked some listings, and actually you can buy one of these nowadays. Sure, I saw them as cheap as like $35,000-$40,000.
Yeah, that's got a hole in the bottom, though.
Well, that's probably
it's
not.
Had a dead
that's
guy
probably
on
not
it.
One that's like totally accessorized and in tip-top condition. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, probably not.
But still, I mean, does it? I mean, maybe. Yeah, it's, I mean, I'm not a pirate, so I don't like know, but
yeah,
it seems like a lot of work to have gone to for kind of a little payoff.
Yeah. Well, I mean, there's other possibilities, though. I mean, supposing, for example. It's not necessarily a huge amount of work. Like suppose let's say for example you do want to get a boat. You don't have to have a huge payoff. You just go down to the marina, sneak inside, find somebody with a nice boat who's leaving. Just say, "Hey, hi, nice boat." Jump on aboard, pull out your gun and say, "Hey, let's take a little ride."
Yeah.
There's some problems then, with this though.
There are some problems, but let me go through
okay.
the scenario.
Yeah.
Let me go through it. So, you know, we go out to sea. And you know, at a certain point, you know, you've been assuring the guy, oh, you play your cards right, you'll come out of this without getting hurt. And you just say, oh, I was joking, and you shoot him and throw him overboard.
Mm-hmm.
Take the boat, go to some other port, sell the boat and you know, whatever valuables and stuff. And
right.
And you've gotten yourself maybe a free ride to another continent and, you know, and also some pocket money, a little walking around money. And so it's entirely conceivable.
Another continent? Did you mean country?
Well, another country, another continent.
I guess
technically, if it was loaded properly with supplies, you could take it all.
Yeah, and probably no. I mean, far more likely that you would just take it to Mexico.
Yeah.
Canada.
Yeah,
it's where pirates go.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah, good point. Yeah,
we talked about those Canadian pirates before.
It's true.
Yeah, of course, there's a problem with this, and I was going to talk about there's another possibility I consider too, which is I'll talk about this one too, which is that. What if he was kidnapped by the North Koreans or somebody like the North Koreans?
Russians?
The Russians or the Chinese.
I was going to say, it doesn't have to necessarily be the North Koreans. It just has to be somebody that recognizes his skills and...
Google. That's who did it.
Actually, it was probably AOL in a bid to get back on top.
That's cool. We don't want to be a joke anymore. We used to be king of the hill.
We created AIM, which they're shutting down.
Yeah,
by the way,
in December.
Oh, yeah, that's right here. Yeah,
but so, anyway.
It could have been Jeeves, man.
Oh, it was Ask Jeeves.
Could have been MySpace.
In 2007,
no.
They were still like doing
Rick.
It.
Were they still? Was it still Rick? Good?
What was it?
Tom?
It was Tom. No, it wasn't Tom. Tom didn't have that kind of organization.
No.
Oh, was it Tom from MySpace?
Yeah.
He was your first friend.
He was your first friend.
His
silly
right.
white t-shirt.
Mm-hmm. Uh-huh. That's right. I forgot about Tom.
Going.
It's been a long time since I've been on MySpace.
It's a different site now.
Oh, is it really?
Mm-hmm.
Is it porn now?
No, yeah. it's music.
Oh,
that's all it is.
Doesn't really matter.
It's artists
but
selling
yeah, I mean,
their own
it,
music
I guess it
artists.
Could have been somebody like kidnapping him, but also. You think he would have been like ransomed, especially when they saw like NASA repositioning satellites. You think that the people who kidnapped him would have been like, oh yeah, there's a lot of money to be thrown at this guy. Like let's ransom him.
Well, unless,
No, you can, I mean, at that point you double down, you know, you've made a good decision and you have stolen something that obviously has a lot of worth
and
this
you,
person
and, you
and you're going to get your money's worth out of them when you get them back to your secret hideaway.
Yeah. You ring as much value as you can. I mean, if you've actually got a tech project that needs that kind of brain power working on it, you know, I mean, hey, there you go.
Yeah, that's where the Raspberry Pi came from.
Yeah, but the Raspberry Pi, you know what that means?
No.
Okay, all right. A tablet?
It's an Android device.
Well, the Raspberry Pi?
Raspberry Pi is the operating system.
Oh, you're right, it is the OS, which means it was even more, it was Jim Gray.
Oh, okay. So I guess I do know what it is.
Yeah.
Sorry, okay.
Oh, okay.
Anyway,
right.
I don't know, I don't think so.
I don't think so, actually. The phone call... The phone calls to his wife and his daughter. They
that kind of sinks
those theories. Yeah, I mean, I was kind of liking those series at first, you know, like the idea of just some criminal who needs to get out of the country. But they're watching all the ports. They're watching the airport. I mean, yeah, they're watching the railroad station, right? I'll just go get a ride on a boat. But again, he probably wouldn't have allowed the phone calls.
No.
Yeah, unlikely. Again, another theory that I was thinking about was murder, which is, again, the phone call kind of messes it up, although I suppose, I see you're Bill Gates and you really have a grudge against Jim Gray. You go hide in the fore cabin and
or just race out to meet him in your own speedboat.
Yeah,
because you're Bill Gates.
Yeah,
and you can have a 400-foot speedboat.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, a 400-foot cigarette boat. You know? I can just picture this giant cigarette boat because like speeding up and just goes down. You know, it pulls alongside him and this little door in the side of the hull opens up and it's Bill Gates. You know. Hey there, Jim. Well, anyway,
fancy meeting you here.
Yeah, I'm gonna the murder thing. The abduction thing is actually some people who knew him are still kind of thinking abduction
because it's
is a
intriguing.
Possibility.
It's interesting. There, it doesn't
and it
have
explains
the
stuff. Right?
It explains the lack. Yeah, it explains.
It explains everything that the leaving for a new life explains. Plus not having to accept that he might have wanted to run away from his own life.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Yeah. It's like if I were close to this case, I definitely would be like, yes, he was just abducted. Of course he was, because it explains everything. And also, you know, he didn't do it voluntarily.
Yeah.
Versus us on the outside, I'm way more willing to say, yeah, he was totally willing to just walk away from his life.
And most of us just don't like the idea that, you know, our friends die or we die to just some random chance, dumb occurrence.
Yeah, it's hard to accept.
It's like, you know, I mean, I want to have a slightly more meaningful death than that.
For me in a cabin in the woods.
Yeah. Okay.
With a rag stuffed in the tailpipe of your car?
No, just hiding in the cabin in the woods.
Oh, okay.
Living lavishly.
We're going to go kick in every door until we find him.
Steve? Yeah. Steve?
Steve? Boom, boom, boom. Steve, you there? Boom, boom, boom. Steve?
That's how they found Kaczynski.
I'm pretty sure that's true, yeah.
Yeah. Oh, Kaczynski.
What's next?
Yeah. Well, let's talk about another theory then. And this is a little more plausible, which is that he just hit an object and it sank his boat. Which it could have been, I mean, that could have been a log or a submerged shipping container, submerged rocks, because the Farallon Islands, especially the southeast Farallon Island, apparently has a lot of shoals around it.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe he screwed up, hit a submerged rock. And he was sailing what's called the California Current, which is a current that flows down the west coast of North America from British Columbia to Baja California. And, of course, as you know, driftwood is very, very common on our coast, the California coast, because trees fall into rivers from erosion and storms and things like that. Mm-hmm. They eventually get swept to sea. They wind up in the California Current and get dragged down and, you know, chunked up on our coastline and even points further south.
One of my biggest complaints about Canada.
Yeah.
All of their driftwood and trees.
All that driftwood crap
they're sending us. Yeah. So he might have hit a log or maybe a shipping container. These are lost on a really regular basis. They're lost consistently.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, I've heard estimates of around 10,000 a year.
Yeah.
Get lost off of ships. The containers aren't watertight. They won't float. But if what's in them is positively buoyant, well, then they will.
Mm-hmm. Like rubber duckies?
Yeah, exactly. If it's filled with rubber duckies or maybe Nike tennis shoes or God knows what, then they might wind up floating just barely beneath the surface. They are a little bit of a shipping hazard. You're not likely to run into one, but if you do, it can be bad news.
Yeah. Those containers are pretty solid.
Yeah, they're made out of very stout steel.
Yep. We saw what it did to Robert Redford.
Uh-huh. Well, what movie was that?
I don't remember the name.
Anyway, but it turns out the CNC-40, the Tenacious, did have a few weak points. What's that?
We talked about this before. Is that what? Robert Redford movie where he didn't say a word through the entire thing.
Oh, yeah. No, I didn't see that one. I know the one you mean, though. I heard about it. It's,
anyway.
It's called Robert Redford Doesn't Talk. That's right. Yeah.
Someone email us.
Yeah.
Don't.
We'll no, I heard it goes, he goes through the entire thing until the very end, and at the very end he goes, crap.
Anyway. Yeah. So what's the name of his boat?
Oh, back to his boat, the CNC-40. The hull of this boat is made of a balsa wood core with fiberglass laminate on both sides, which makes for a very stiff, strong, but light hull.
Mm-hmm.
And these were originally built as, they're sort of a hybrid racer slash kind of pleasure boat, so they had comfortable accommodations, but they were speedy as well. They were overtaken by technology, of course, and so that's why they got cheaper.
Right.
But back in the day, they were spendy and really fast. But if the fiberglass delaminates or if it gets punctured, well, then the balsa, of course, can soak up water. It eventually rots.
Sure.
And now you've got a big weak point that can be punched through pretty easily by something like a floating log.
Yeah.
And then all is lost, which is the name of the Robert Redford movie.
That's right, all is lost. Is that good, by the way? Should I see it?
Yeah, you'd enjoy it.
Oh, yeah? Okay. I'll watch that one then. Put it on my Netflix. Netflix.
Your Netflix?
My Netflix. I'm having issues with those guys. I'll talk about that some other time now. But there was another problem with the CNC 40, which is the keel.
And again, the keel is the fin on the bottom of the boat.
Yeah, exactly.
And it's like the surfboard fin, only giant.
Yeah, only a lot bigger, and it weighs a lot more because on a sailboat, it's got to keep it upright. In the case of the CNC 40, it's a 4-ton chunk of steel or lead or whatever that's bolted to the bottom of the boat. But the bottom of the hull on this particular boat is nearly flat, and to maximize headroom in the cabin, because remember, this was not a strictly Spartan racing boat. It was supposed to be a kind of a nice cruising boat, too.
Mm-hmm.
They wanted full headroom in there. So the bilges are kept shallow in this particular design. There's very little room for transverse support, meaning beams that go across that help to support the keel and you know, keep it, like, you know,
from even side to side.
Yeah, and front and back and everything. Keep it firmly just attached to the hull of the boat. And so it's got kind of minimal support on the inside. And so what would happen is the keel is a dagger type, which means that it's actually taller than it is long. So if the attachment
wide?
Point is... Why?
No, wide. Yeah, you mean taller than it is wide?
Yeah. Well, I guess wide. When I'm thinking long, I'm thinking from fore to aft.
Okay.
Yeah.
Gotcha.
Some people would see that as wide, but I see it as long.
Yeah,
but
it's longer than it is. I'm thinking of it from the side view.
Wider than long. Yeah, okay. Yeah, tall, long, whatever. Anyway, so... the attachment point is not tremendously long, so stresses are not spread out.
Okay.
And so if you happen to run into sand underwater rock on your CNC 40, the front of the keel can be torn off the hull. The trailing edge can actually be levered up and around and into the bottom of the hull.
Oh.
So you can basically do a 180 in place.
Yeah, it goes. Yeah, it just comes right back up into
the
bottom
of the hull.
Yeah. And this has actually happened on CNC 40s.
And what pierce the bottom of the...
In this one case that I read about, it hit a rock at 7 knots. The keel punched right through the bottom of the boat. And
It sank.
Yeah, and Jim Gray was known sailing in an area known for its shoals, right?
Mm-hmm.
But, of course, if he'd hit a rock and his boat's taking on water at a catastrophic rate, then why didn't he run his boat up onto shore? I don't know. Maybe he thought he could still save his boat, and he didn't want to total his boat. Maybe he was actually too far from the islands. I don't know.
Maybe he hit a shipping container.
Yeah, that could have done
the same
thing.
In the middle
of
the shipping lane.
Yeah.
You know.
But again.
Or maybe he didn't realize what had happened.
Yeah, and so either one of these things. I mean, his hull. The hull could have been punched through by a log or a shipping container, or he hits a shipping container with the keel, and it punches through his hull. But
there's a whole bunch of ways to put a hole in the bottom of his boat.
In the hull.
Yeah, getting at.
Hole in the hull.
Whole story.
Oh, God. So the boat did have some weaknesses. But again, we got to ask, why didn't his EPIRB? That was emergency something, something, something. You know, I forget what that's called.
Radio broadcast.
There's
a lot of pretty simple reasons why that didn't go off.
Well, one is that apparently he kept it below decks. Because... you're supposed to have them out, like, you know, like maybe attached to your railing or whatever. But people usually, when they have their boats stored in the marina, they take valuable stuff off and lock it up down below.
Seems like a good idea.
Oh, yeah.
Well, and he could have had it in something like this Pelican case that happens to be in the room that we're recording in, which are typically made to be watertight. So nothing would have activated it to
True.
Go off.
Yeah, for sure. But
if it was stored in that manner.
Yeah, well, actually, I think they had it stored in like a cloth bag. They would take it off at the end of the day of sailing and put it in the cloth bag and store it below decks.
Mm-hmm.
And it might be that Jim felt like, man, he didn't feel like deploying it because he's going on just a little day trip, but he's not actually going out very far into the ocean. Nice weather and everything like that. He probably didn't bother deploying it.
The other thing is, though, is, you know, he might have tried, but it may not have been maintained properly.
Yeah,
because
well,
they require batteries.
Yeah, it's true.
And if
yeah.
you don't check your batteries, they discharge themselves over time.
Yeah.
And that would completely, you know, make the thing useless.
Yeah, it could have been. Yeah.
I mean, I think I'm kind of with Joe on this, in that when you're these kind of shorter day trips, you're not like, I mean, you are out in the middle of the ocean, but you're not out in the middle of the ocean, especially if you've done this run a number of times. You think, well, it's a nice day, not going to crash. And if I do, I can swim to shore.
And well, there's also,
I can save myself.
He's got the radio. He's not far from the Coast Guard. There's other boats around.
Yeah.
You know, mm-hmm. even if they're not right next to you, there's other boats.
Yeah.
You know, you
can, somebody will come save
me. Off
a
flare or get off a radio yeah. signal, whatever. He did probably just didn't see it as a situation.
But
or like you said,
this huge
he could have had one that just had a bad set of batteries and they leaked and you know or mm-hmm. something like that.
Well, yeah, I mean, you apparently yeah. from what I've come to understand, you have to do a little bit of maintenance on them. They're like your remote control. After a year or so, you got to change the batteries.
Oh yeah, for sure.
Even though they don't get heavy use.
Yeah, and so the EPIRB not deploying to me is not that mysterious, given the circumstances. But again, that you still got to wonder. Well, why was there no radio distress call?
That doesn't really surprise me that much.
Well, maybe he was too busy trying to save the boat to get on yeah. the radio. I mean, and maybe by the time he realized that it was hopeless, the radio was already underwater.
Yeah.
Or fried, for some reason. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Or who knows? I mean, maybe if he runs into something, maybe he loses his balance and hits his head.
Yeah.
I mean, there's all kinds of reasons.
I think a lot of times about being like the first responder to like a medical emergency,
yeah.
right? You know, and you're like, oh, I'm going to run up to this thing. And then at what point do you call 911? You know, it's like if you're the only person there and you're trying to assist somebody, and I'm trying to liken this to a ship, right? You're like, you're so busy doing all these things that you realize, oh crap, I never actually called someone. I've been so busy trying to do these other things and it's too late. You know, I'm doing CPR. I can't stop doing CPR because literally you're not allowed to stop doing CPR once you're starting to do it. So like, how am I going to, I hope somebody comes along.
Yeah, he's the little Dutch boy with his finger in the dike trying yeah. to stop this one spot yeah. from leaking.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
he can't get away because if he lets go, it's going to leak.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So
I can totally sympathize with the idea of it just being too late.
Yeah, it could be that he just...
Or he didn't realize.
Well, Jim was a very capable guy from everything I heard, and it might well be that he thought, well, I can handle this.
Yeah.
And realized too late, oh, maybe I can't mm-hmm. handle this. Oopsie, my radio's yeah. fried. And oh, but yeah, get off the life raft. Well, it's too late for that too.
Yeah.
I'm still not so sure.
I think one of the other things, at least for me, I'm a very like controlling person, as you guys know.
Oh yeah.
No.
And whenever I've been in situations,
bossy boots.
With like, I mean, you know, like after a life tragedy, like losing a parent, for instance, right?
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes you try to grasp at these straws of like, these are the only situations I can control. You know, what can I control? And even, I think it could even have extrapolated out even more in a situation with an emergency where he would be like, yes, I can control this. I can do it. I will take care of myself. It's all on me and I can do it and everything's going to be great and everything's going to be perfect. And then it just kind of...
Yeah.
I don't think you even have to add the fact of, you know, the loss of a parent to
but
that.
I don't think
he may have just considered himself such a competent sailor that he bypassed standard procedures because he knew better because he's a brilliant, guy.
Alternately,
I know what to do.
We talk about this too a lot. I think just, you know, the last couple of weeks we've talked about this where you never know how somebody's going to react in an emergency.
Mm-hmm.
He could have just lost it. He could have just suddenly known what to do at all and just totally frozen and been like, oh, I'm going to release the jib. That'll help. And, you know, it's like, well, in no rational brain is that going to help, but his brain just panicked.
It's just like, yeah, it's kind of like people act in horror movies, you know?
Yeah.
Like, okay, I just clubbed the villain with a baseball bat. Now I'm going to drop the bat and run away. Okay. That makes sense. Yeah,
yes,
I mean, of course.
Sure.
Yeah,
I'm
going to
stop and call the orcas. They will save me.
Yeah.
Free Willy.
Yeah, the only weakness of the Siri, again, we have no radio distress, no flotsam whatsoever.
Yeah.
Although one theory that's been put out about that is that apparently it could be that if the boat was holed at the back or even in the middle, took on a lot of water, there's more weight in the back of the boat fuel tanks for the diesel, also the diesel engine itself are in the back. It could have gone down stern first. And so, assuming he had nothing like laying around on the deck,
everything was strapped down like it's supposed to be.
Either strapped down or already below decks, and it goes down stern first, well, then nothing gets out.
You know, that actually is one of the things that a lot of people point to, which we didn't actually talk about in the suicide theory, is that if he intentionally did this, he could have...
He probably was smart enough.
Yeah, he would have had everything strapped down. He would have shut the door mm-hmm. and then punched a hole in the bottom, and the water would have come in, yeah. but nothing would have been able to actually escape from the cabin because the hatch was closed.
Yeah, you pop it. You can pop those hatches open, actually, for ventilation purposes. You can pop them open just an inch or two.
Mm-hmm.
So you pop them open, enough to let air out.
But it makes it hard for things to get out because
for sure.
Most things are too big to slide through that little hole.
So Jim, being a smart guy, he would know where the continental shelf was. He would go past it in the nice deep water where he's not going to be found,
mm-hmm.
as they did look around the bottom for him. My final thoughts on the whole thing are, even though I think that's possible, I still have a problem with that scenario, which is that, again, his EPIRB didn't go off, no radio distress signal, no flotsam from the boat. He couldn't deploy his life raft. I mean, that's a lot of things that should have happened. At least a couple of those things should have happened if he took some damage and started taking on huge amounts of water. Which leads me to think that, again, the possibility that he might have had a heart attack or a stroke or something. And
yeah, we were talking about this earlier. Yeah.
And again, the Coast Guard was searching, but they were searching initially, I think, fairly close in between the islands and San Francisco. And it wasn't until... As far as I know, I mean, I calculated how far just under sail he would have gotten at the end of the first day. I mean, we're talking 5 to 6 knots. He would have been around, and this is by 8 a.m. the next morning, the morning of the 29th, he would have been around 140 to 160 miles west of San Francisco, which would have been theoretically within the search area, but I don't know how far out at that point they were flying their planes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I don't know.
Well, especially because, as we talked about, he wasn't reported missing until... like 8 p.m. that night, and then it was
p.m.
night.
And it was night.
You know,
and so I don't know how far. I'm pretty sure that that immediate night they would have been searching between the islands and his and the
I would agree with that.
Port of San Francisco.
So that gives him about 50 miles to play with, because it's only 30 miles to the island.
Yeah.
In 12 hours, he would have gone 70 or 80 miles. He would have been well outside of their search area at that point.
Sure. And we're talking like, it's, you know, so he keeps putting another 180 or 140 to 150 miles of distance between them per day. And I don't think the Coast Guard actually started looking further out. They eventually went as far as, I think, 350 miles out from shore.
But eventually.
But by that time, he could have been far, far further than that. And so, and I know that they brought all sorts of resources. All these satellites overflew the area and everything, and they looked at that stuff. But it's really hard to say without knowing what areas were photographed by this satellite and when the photograph was taken. Mm-hmm. It's really hard to say. I mean, if it was taken like 200 miles out, but it was taken like, you know, 3-4 days after he went missing, well, he would have been long gone.
Yeah.
It really is.
So what's your best theory?
My best theory is that he had something incapacitated him, and the boat just sailed on
autopilot.
It just sailed on an autopilot. And then, eventually, of course, the battery ran flat, the autopilot failed, the boat just started wallowing, and probably at some point it was just... and I'm assuming because it was a nice day, the hatches, including the main hatch, they were probably all open.
Mm-hmm.
And so probably the boat eventually just got swamped.
Mm-hmm. But somewhere like in the middle of the Pacific Ocean where nobody will ever find it.
Yeah, probably. That's my best theory, but it's not conclusive at all.
I mean, Steve, what's your best theory?
I still, in this instance, it's either new life or he was abducted.
Yeah. I like to think good thoughts, so I would generally say new life.
New life, okay. Yeah.
I don't think it, you know, in my rational brain, I don't think that's the best theory, but that's the one I want to be true.
Listen, he may have realized that he was is it in, it's not in the zenith. He was at the tail end of his career and he was starting to be outpaced by everything
waning.
Else. Yes.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah.
And
like the moon.
Things were outpacing him and he may have realized he didn't have too much longer that he was going to be able to be on top of the game.
And decided to go out and on a good note. Yeah. Well, how about this? Is this theory? It only just occurred to me. What? Let's combine the disappeared on a new life thing with pirates. No, with pirates.
He went to go be a pirate.
Yeah, essentially. Well, the pirates go to take over his boat, and he starts talking to him. He says, "You know, I've been thinking about a career change, and I am leaving to go to Ensenada to start a new life anyway. Why don't I be?" And he became a pirate.
I think maybe aliens could have just abducted his entire boat.
Yeah, they could have beamed him up to the
They beamed him up, and then he got there, and they realized how smart he was, and they were like, yeah, okay, we're keeping you.
Yeah. Hey, dude, can you...
It's great. You can be the person who will, like, help us understand
humans. Can you fix our database?
Can you clean up our COBOL code, dude?
SQL is a bear.
You know, we cannot get Windows 98 to work anymore. Can you just...
He's like, oh, yeah, no, nobody could. Nah, I can't even help you with that. Sorry.
Yeah.
So they dropped him in the ocean.
I know.
Windows XP.
Because they had the blue screen of death.
Yeah.
Dunk, 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 dunk.
I don't know. I just hope he started a new life somewhere.
Yeah, I like the idea of Jim becoming a pirate. He eventually became, you know, captain of the pirates. But I'm going to go with he had a stroke or something like that theory. But it seems most likely, and it fits the facts of the best. But other than that, I can't really say much more. Jim, if you're out there listening, send us a note. Don't post on Reddit. Just send us an email, please. Yeah.
We promise to keep your secret.
Yeah, we will keep your secret unless, well, no, of course we will.
Yeah, of course we will.
All right. So that's about it for this week. If you're out there, of course, Jim, you're going to want our email address, which is thinkingsidewayspodcast@gmail.com. And anybody else, if you want to send us an email and argue with us or tell us how wonderful we are, whatever, you can do that too. Of course, we have a website. It is thinkingsidewayspodcast.com, where you can listen to our episodes. You'll also find an episode list out there for all the many, many episodes we've done. And you can buy merch. Look on the right-hand side. You can buy mugs, t-shirts, bombs. I don't know. What else?
No bombs.
No bombs.
Oh, damn it. What else? We're on social media. We are on Facebook, where we have a group and our page. So like the page. Join the group. Lots of fun stuff happening out there.
Answer the questions.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Answer the questions.
You have to answer the questions.
That's
or
right.
Who
we
will not
have,
let you in the group.
We now have questions. I forgot about that. Also, social media. We are on Twitter, where we are Thinking Sideways. We're on Reddit, where we have a subreddit called Thinking Sideways. And also, of course, you're going to wonder where else you can find us. You can find us on iTunes, which you probably know that already, but I'll tell you that anyway. And of course, leave a comment, leave a rating. We like those things, good ratings anyway. And also, you can stream us on Stitcher and God knows all kinds of other places. All right, well, that's about it. So looks like we're going to sail off into the sunset. So till next week, ta-ta.
Bye, guys. I don't have any puns. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Ahoy. Chips ahoy.
Aloha.